back to the Supercoach Champions podcast. It's Catfish again, or barely here. But look, I had some thoughts. I wanted to get it off of my chest because I'm getting questions about these players, and I just thought, look, let's just put it all out there, and yep, I can just refer to this. So apologies again for the voice, but I am getting better slowly. But yeah, just bear with me. It sounds worse than it is, so please don't feel sorry for me. But yeah, so just throughout this week, plenty of messages about these same few players for trade-ins and same few players for trade-outs, so let's just talk about it all in one go. First guy, it's Billy Smith from the Roosters. He's obviously, you know, 289,500, negative 62 break-even, coming off back-to-back scores of 71 and 80. And more impressively, 67 and 56 in base and base attack. The Roosters love this kid. They've persevered with him through multiple ACL injuries. He keeps getting a shot. Keep in mind, you know, when he first came onto the scene, he pushed Josh Morris out of the team. Or, you know, Morris was dropped to reserve grade so Billy could play ahead of him. So I think that speaks to how highly the Roosters rate him. He's just been let down constantly by his body. He did have some, you know, games on the wing in last year's, you know, early on and then later on. But yeah, it's just back-to-back season-ending injuries. We've all had him in our teams. He's copped it. So it's been a rough ride for Billy, but look, he looks fantastic. He's definitely passing the eye test. In weeks where the Roosters have not scored any points, he's been able to be one of their best performers, a few, you know, attacking threats in there. And look, just looking over it, obviously, the work rate is fantastic. He's been good in the past. I mean, not quite as good as the first two games this year, but even last year, playing center, base and base attack of 38, 45, 28. That was against the Panthers, though. And then even the year before, in his first two games in first grade, base and base attack of 20, 25 and then 44. So, look, if he's going to churn out a 40 to 45 average in base and base attack, he's going to make plenty of cash. Now, I know the question is his job security. Like I said, the Roosters really like this kid. So I kind of think as long as he's healthy, he's going to be their preferred left center. I know they had Suli'i trained there. You know, he was obviously their preseason decision for left center, but Billy wasn't ready yet. He was still injured. Now, Suli'i since then has not set the world on fire. He's been pretty disappointing, and he's also committed to Union from next season on. So I just see little reason for the Roosters to really want to persist with him there, especially when they're having to play guys like Corey Allen and Jackson Paulo. So if anything, you know, if Manu's back in round 14 or 15, even if he goes back to the centres, then that's fine. I don't think he's going to go back straight away. Sam Walker's probably out till round 16. So for me, I just want Billy Smith to cover round 16 primarily. We know he doesn't play 13. He's going to get that clear run for a little bit. So, you know, if he's done his job covering till round 16, I'm happy with that. He's going to make a ton of cash in that time. Now, what could be better is if he doesn't go back, let's say Sam Walker comes in, Minor goes back to right center, Suli'i might go to the wing, and Billy Smith stays at left center. You know, where's Daniel Tupou? He might be round 14 or 15 as well, I don't know. But if he comes back, I reckon just Corey Allen drops out instead of Allen to center. Like, they've tried that. It's not great. So I definitely think if there's a center, it'll be Billy Smith or Suli'i. And again, you know, Suli'i's better winger than he is, than Billy Smith is as a winger. So to me, it's a stronger lineup to go Tupou, Suli'i on the wings, Billy Smith, Manu on the centers. So to me, I'm happy to roll the dice. I think he's the standout option to bring in this week. So yeah, I think that's enough on Billy Smith there. Next name is Harrison Edwards, obviously, from the Bulldogs, 297,100, negative 46 break even. He's front row forward only, so that's part of the issue here. He's already had a price rise. He went up 96K in 1 week, obviously a very late inclusion into the team, but he came in and he went straight to starting at lock, and he's been named there again. So look, there's a lot of question marks over Harrison Edwards. There's so much speculation about Harrison Edwards, right? So I wanted to clarify a few things as I understand them. So firstly, he's on a development contract. So the rules say he can't come in and play first grade if there's a player in the top 30 that can play his position. So he's played up before last week, which was round 11. So round 11 is when development players can come in and be selected for first grade. So that presumably is what happened last week. Now, in terms of his two games beforehand, there were lots of injuries, right? So that's why he was able to come in and play. So his first game this year was in round six. He played 62 minutes. And, you know, keep in mind, in that game, they had obviously no Kikau, no Luke Thompson, no Pangai, no RFM. All of these guys were injured, hence why he could come in. Now, he scored, it wasn't a great score, 36 in 62 minutes. So it's also worth noting that his minutes may have been inflated that game. I mean, Ryan Sutton only played 36 minutes. Preston played 70. And Curtis Morin, 33. Samuel Hughes, 14. Jackson Tupini, 70. And it's also worth noting, Addo Carr, he got injured in the 10th minute. So this is the game that he got hurt. So there was obviously big minutes on offer. Max King was there playing 62 minutes as well. So I guess that's why I think his minutes were inflated for a debut. Fast forward to round 9. Next game he comes in, it's round, he plays 58 minutes. You know, Sutton's injured, so he's out. Max King is injured, he's out. Obviously still no Addo Carr. Karaz is injured at this stage. Josh Reynolds is also on the bench. I forgot to mention he was on the bench the first game as well. And the other guys on the bench, Curtis Morin, Jaden Ockenball, Carl Oluapu, and Samuel Hughes, who played 9 minutes. Curtis Morin, 23, Ockenball, 43. And RFM plays 60 minutes, Preston plays 66 due to having to go off for a HIA. Waddell's playing 70, Pangai plays 46. So, you know, again, you know, out of necessity, pretty much, Harrison had to play. It seems that he obviously is getting preference to, you know, guys like Morin and Hughes at this stage. But he's obviously still getting a shot because of all the other guys there. Now, round 11 comes along, it's a different story, right? He can be selected, hence why he came in. Max King's back, only playing 39 minutes. Pangai, 39 minutes. RFM, 35 minutes. Harrison, with his highest minutes yet of 68. Oluapu plays 55 minutes. Ockenball, 50. And Franklin Pele, just 9 minutes. So, to me, he's, you know, there's two ways to look at it. One, he's demanding those minutes because he's playing well. I'm not sure. Look, it's hard to read into it. He was great this third game, but the first two, obviously, you know, he was okay. I don't think he was massive or, you know, a game changer or anything like that. Whereas this game, I think he had a big impact. So even his first two games, 36 and 62 minutes and 44 and 58. In 68 minutes, he scored 94, but keep in mind, there is obviously a line break and a try in there, and also try contribution. So that's 31 points there. Take that away, he's scoring 63 and 68, and that's still really good as long as he keeps getting those minutes. I think Max King is the best middle forward they have in that team, and as he gets over that rib issue or whatever injury he's also dealing with, I think that'll allow him to come and build his minutes again. I don't think he's going to play 39 minutes or whatever he played this round. So to me, one, job security, I think it's improved. There was something from Gus Gould saying Luke Thompson's unfortunately had a bit of a setback, out indefinitely, so I don't think we're going to see him back anytime soon. So that helps for Edwards. Also, Franklin Pele, he, you know, fresh off playing 9 minutes in first grade, he went back to reserve grade the next day. So first grade was on Friday. Last week he went back and played like almost 30 minutes on the Saturday in reserve grade. He managed to get himself suspended for 2 weeks. So as I understand it, he's not dropped. He's out for 2 weeks, so he can't play. So to me, I don't know where that leaves Edwards job security-wise. Better because Thompson's out. Not so good because at any point Pele could come back in. It just really comes down to what Serrato wants to do. I tend to think Edwards is, you know, carved himself out a spot here, but I don't think his minutes are going to be as good. I can see his minutes coming down to maybe, you know, around the 50 mark. And on his PPM so far, that might only translate to a 40 to 45 average unless, you know, we see something more. I'm hoping to see more, but, you know, it's a very small sample size. So I guess to summarize all of that, I think I expect him to keep his spot in the team. I expect him to, you know, at least average 40 to 45. I don't think he's going to be, you know, as good as people talking about, like some mentioning that he might be like a cut price alternative to Christian Welsh, who you could play for a 50. Like, Welsh has been pretty good surprisingly, aside from that one-off game that I think all of us just had, you know, our impressions ruined by him. So I think Welsh, like, Edwards is not Welsh light, basically. He's more like Stefano, if anything, but, you know, with less job security, pretty much. So the one thing I will say is I think Edwards is safe while Pele's out. So, you know, with that 94 in his rolling average, he's going to make cash over the next 2 weeks. That's round 12. They don't play round 13. It'll be round 14 as well. So just looking at the cash generation, look, without knowing what he's going to score, if he's going to, you know, churn out a couple of decent points, maybe he comes, you know, even if worst case scenario, he scores 240s in the next 2 weeks, right? In round 15, he's going to be roughly 415, maybe 420,000, if not more, if he scores better than 2 times 40 in the next two rounds. And at that point, you're probably hoping, let's just stick it out to round 16, right? Let him play that game, and then we'll see how we go after that. So if he keeps churning out 40s, he's still going to be over 400K after round 16. So it's not like he's going to peak and then bleed as long as he's hitting that 40 mark, if not better. If he keeps averaging 45, then he's going to keep, you know, going up a little bit. So worst case scenario, I don't think there's a lot of risk here. Of course, barring injury, but that's with every trade in. So, you know, I think he's definitely got a spot while Pele's out, suspended. Afterwards, I still think he's got a spot, but, you know, that's a who knows, right? So I'm looking at this going worst case scenario, round 14, he's dropped. He's going to be worth 420K. So maybe he's gone up, you know, enough to justify the downgrade for whoever you're bringing in, or, you know, he's going to make enough cash to probably make it worthwhile. Next is, you know, medium result is maybe he sticks in the team, makes a little bit more cash, covers round 16 as well. And, you know, you'll offload him for 110K more. And he's giving you some valuable buy points on a big buy round. I mean, if you're looking at best case scenarios, he's earned his job on form. He's going to play 60 to 65 minutes every week on, you know, as a starting lock. And then if that's the case, I think he can easily average 50 to 55, in which case he is Christian Welsh, basically. So, except he's got buy coverage. So to me, I think that's probably how I'd play it. I think he's a decent risk as a result of it. I'm sorry I had to go into all that detail to explain, but I hope that, you know, makes it clear where I'm looking at this. I think he's worth the punt, especially if you've got someone like a Murdoch Masilla like me who's just stinking it up. And, you know, he was a starting edge back role, but he's not anymore. He's a bench forward and he's just bleeding any little cash he's made. So for me, I think it's worthwhile tipping the 40, 50K into him to get him to Edwards. And that way Edwards will probably give me some points in round 16, maybe 19 if he's got that, you know, Welsh light or even Christian Welsh type scoring that we're hoping for as a bare minimum. All right, the third name obviously on everyone's lips this week is Ben Trbojevic. He's 236K, 600, second row center wing, dual position. He's got a negative 3 break even, and, you know, he's got a 33 and a 43 in his last two scores, both with attacking stats in them. So, yeah, hence why he's got that negative break even. Now, I guess he's been named to start on an edge. Kelma Tuolangi is out for at least 4 weeks, if not 6 weeks, due to that facial fracture he's gone for surgery on. So, you know, I'm factoring in, I'm assuming he's going to miss 4 weeks, and that'll give Ben a bit of a clear run. So I've got him, you know, a distant third so far this week in the terms of the cheapy downgrades. I mean, he's the cheapest of the lot, and he's got on paper a decent, you know, position as a starting edge back rower. But it's hard to judge this Manly team, right? Because, I mean, Anthony Seibold, I mean, without going into too much, I don't rate him as a coach, and I think he's going to make decisions and change things all the time. Now, you know, Ethan Bullimore has been playing as an edge. I think he's better as an impact forward. Ben Condon was an edge at the Cowboys, but he's been playing middle since he's gone to the Seagulls, so I don't think he's a threat. However, Samuel Ofanu is an edge back rower primarily, so there's people in this lineup who not only could start ahead of Ben, and, you know, they're in the last game, so you have to go early on him, and there's risk inherently that he could be a late swap in final teams to the bench. Even if not, though, even if he stays starting, you kind of need him to play 80 minutes to be worthwhile based on the very limited amount of information we have so far. So as far as I can see, in first grade, he's only ever played one game at 80 minutes playing on an edge. And that was in round nine last year. He scored two tries and scored 96. He only had 38 points in base and base attack, but he did play the full game on the edge. Although, if I'm not mistaken, he scored one of those tries lining up almost at center. So he was quite wide and kind of got lucky with one of those tries. But, you know, I digress. Later in that season, round 24 and 25, he played 80-minute games, both at center, and scored 32, 47. And sorry, I forgot. Round 10, he also played 80 minutes at center, scoring 33. So the good thing is all of that is in base and base attack, except I think he, in his 47, he did have a line break and a line break assist. So, you know, at center, he's 32, 33, 33 base and base attack. At edge, he's, you know, maybe 40, give him a little bit of leeway there. But the thing is, we just haven't seen him get through 80 on an edge. He either gets hurt himself, he doesn't get to play 80, or, you know, we just don't know. So far this year, he's come on as a bench forward. Just have a look at his scores yourself. They're not great. So that is the risk for me. I think if he's going to start, yeah, he could be worthwhile. He's going to cover around 13 for you. He's going to, you know, maybe cover around 16. He won't help you around 14. And he's got a handy dual position. The issue for me is he's a genuine AE nightmare. I think the way the injuries lie for the Seagulls, they're smashed. So he could have a set role for some time. It's just a question of whether he's going to start. And if he starts this week, does he start next week or the week after? Or not the week after, that's around 14, but you get what I'm saying. I just think there's a lot more risk around Ben Trbojevic. And yeah, that's why I have him behind Edwards and Smith so far. Coupled with, I hate trading in guys like downgrades like this with uncertainty around them in the final game of the round where, you know, I'm sure if we knew 100% because he's playing in the second or third game, he's named to start, that's fine, you can make those trades. He's playing final game of the round, you're stuck, right? You traded out the guy you traded out, you can't trade him back in. Unless you happen to have a Seagull or a Raider that you could trade to Ben Trbojevic because it's the same game. So that's kind of how I see it there. I can understand people still want to take the risk because he's got the handy dual position, but it's not for me. I'll have to give him a miss myself. Next player I wanted to talk about is Helam Lukey, 523,400, an edge back rower from the Cowboys. Breaking even of 14, but it's worth noting that he's got 27 and 121 in his rolling average. So even if he scores, you know, say 55, 60 or something like that, he will either have a single digit or negative break even next week. So the 14 is not going to be his lowest break even, provided he gets a decent score. So look, Lukey, I gave a shout out actually, you know, two rounds ago, and some of you took the risk and jumped on, cashed in with the 121. So well done to those who took that risk. But yeah, it's a different story now because now he's, you know, another 70-odd K more expensive and the whole landscape's changed, right? Because we've now found out Luciano Leilua, his court case has been dropped, charges dropped. Not only is he not on the no-fault standout anymore, he's been given an exemption via the NRL to allow him to play this week. So he's come straight into the squad. Now, I understand he's been training all season, Lucy, and he's probably still fit in, you know, footy shape, but he's not match fit. We know that. He hasn't played any footy at all because he hasn't been able to. So, you know, we hear the players talk about it all the time. You can do all the preseason training you want, but there's nothing like real in-game intensity. That match fitness takes time to build up. So I expect for early on, Lucy's going to spend time building up that. Now, I'm talking about him a lot because, you know, he was playing on the edge at the back end of last year. Before that, he was coming off as a bench middle, sometimes playing on the edge, just that versatile kind of bench forward that he can do both. Now, I see with the Cowboys, the way they are, they're getting some troop backs in coming weeks. You know, Lolo's going to be back soon. Griffin Neem is a couple of weeks away. They're all slated for around 14, 15, 16, give or take. Jeremiah Nanai is suspended till around 14. So, you know, the cavalry is coming back. That's going to muddy the water a little bit for Lukey. Now, for me, Lukey's still an option, albeit a less solid one than he was, you know, a week or two ago because of what's happened. Now, for me, he's going to score well this week. He's going to score well next week because there's no Nanai. Lucey might come in, but I think he's going to be getting limited minutes off the bench. And, you know, he's going to be competing firstly. And I think, you know, if anything, he's going to take minutes off the Goz, Krzyzewski, not Lukey, because eye test why Lukey is damn good. He looks really good for someone who's come off another serious injury. Now, we know coming off a major injury, there is inherently going to be injury risk there. So that's, you know, we've already seen it this year, right? Lukey got hurt again as he tried to make his comeback. So that could happen again, hence why I definitely don't think he's a home run trade-in. I think he's a decent pod. A lot of people will stay off him. And, you know, the Cowboys have a decent draw, obviously, you know, with the Tigers this week. And then the Eels, you know, that's a bit up in the air. That might be a bit tougher. So, look, I guess I think he's going to be good the next 2 weeks. That'll be enough for Lukey to make a decent bit of cash. You could potentially trade him out in round 14. And if he hits, you know, 60 in the next 2 weeks, then he'll be roughly, you know, 620K, give or take. And maybe you're thinking it's not a lot of cash, but I'm looking at the, you know, the lower end of outcomes here, where he's only given you decent points while, you know, Nanai and the other guys are still injured. And then you can cash him out at a peak. And then if that's the case, then you trade him in round 14 or 15 to, like, you could probably downgrade him to Elisa Katoa and make, you know, 80, 90K off that. You could, you know, spend a little and get him up to a Britton Nakora who'll cover 16 and 19. So there are ways that I think Lukey can still be a viable pot option over the next 2 weeks. And then also, you know, make a bit of cash and then move him on. Look, best case scenario, he nails down that edge spot. We have to remember there were, before he got hurt last year, there was talk basically, you know, Lukey and Nanai were going to be the long-term edges for the Cowboys for years to come. You know, that chat was actually happening because they were both playing so well. And, you know, they'd obviously had Tom Gilbert there. Gilbert was playing the role where he'd start on the edge, play 20 minutes, and then move into the middle when Lukey came onto the bench, or, you know, some mix of that. So, you know, that's gone. There is obviously in the range of outcomes is a possibility where Lukey's the new Tom Gilbert, you know, mixing 60 minutes-ish between, you know, 20, 30 in the middle and then the rest on the edge or something like that. And if that's the worst case scenario, look, Lukey will still go up, give you some solid points and make some cash, and then you move him on. So, you know, the downside is fairly limited. The worst case scenario is you burn to trade for not as many points as you hoped and not as much cash as you hoped. But it's not like he's going to be a disaster based off the fact that he's got that 121 in there for 2 weeks and the 27 to drop out next week. Next player I want to talk about is Cody Nikorima. He's getting a little bit of buzz because he's, you know, available at 5'8 and also at hooker. He's 375, 900. And look, the fact is, you know, I think people are so desperate to get off a Sonny Luke or something like that, that they're looking at all options available. Nikorima does have a -27 break even. So that's off back-to-back good scores of 68 and 75. But let's keep in mind, it wasn't that long ago that he was coming off the bench, basically, not doing very much. I think there was chat from the preseason that Nikorima was trying to fight for a half spot, but it was, you know, Sean O'Sullivan, and then it was between Katoa and Milford, and then Nikorima was a distant fourth, and Nikorima was firming to be that super sub. Now, things are different, obviously. Nikorima, you know, he's one of the two first-choice halves at the moment. O'Sullivan's still out recovering. Milford is back, but he's on the bench. And I guess it's a matter of time, you know, is it just Cody Nikorima has to keep playing well to keep his spot as a starting half, or does it eventually move into Milford starting when he hits full fitness again and Nikorima goes to the bench where he can play that utility role, which he probably trained most of the preseason for. So, I look, I'm not going to say he's not an option, but I didn't like it when he was in the sub-300s. I really don't like it at 375K. So I think it's a little bit too pricey. You just have to look and see what some of his earlier scores where he could easily drop a, you know, a 15, 20, 30 score, and that'll tank a lot of his price rises. So I guess it's maybe buyer beware, basically, if you're taking a punt on Nikorima. Now, some of the trade-outs. Look, Joey Manu is probably the name that plenty of people are talking about. I tend to think he'll be back around 14. That's just my gut feel. No evidence behind it at all. And I think with Walker still out, most likely till round 16, like I said earlier, that's my understanding anyway, I think Manu will go back to the 5'8 role. So there's probably no real concern once he comes back as to his performance. I think if he's fit to play, he'll play as he usually does. So there's no real concern there. It's just really, in terms of whether you trade him out, it's really just your team specific. If you've saved some trades, he probably could go for 2 weeks. He was never helping with you with round 13 anyway. So if you flick him on for 2 weeks, use the cash for another round 13 number or whatever, and then you can trade a round 13 coverage guy like a Jared Croker or something like that back to Joey Manu, then that's probably how I'd play it if I've got the trades to spare. If you're low on trades, just hold him, you know. He just can stick around, and then, yeah, he's going to be a season-long keeper, I still think, at centre wing. Whether he's at 5'8 or not, like 5'8, I definitely think he will be. If he's, you know, back to centre, hopefully, you know, it's because Walker's back, and then the team might be have a little bit more scoring potential, and Manu can score better in terms of getting some attacking stats as well. So, yeah, I think that's how I look at it. So whether he's a sell or not, I can get around selling him. I can also get around holding him. Just really comes down to what you your specific team needs, your team trade situation, all of that type of stuff. Zach Hosking is the next name. Obviously, you know, I have Hosking myself. I'm also, you know, I played him last week, so I know the sting of that 28. But, you know, initially I was like, yeah, Hosking's gone, piss him off. But the more I think about it, like, his break-even's only 74. I mean, he passed his HIA, he just didn't come back on. And, you know, why was that? I don't know. I don't think Ivan Cleary's addressed it. Maybe it was because Hosking's played, you know, a lot of minutes so far this year. This is his first full season of first grade. And, you know, he wanted to maybe get some more game time under Liam Martin's belt. Maybe because Scott Sorensen was absolutely killing it. He was on fire. So he just let him cook, basically. There's many reasons for it. I don't expect those to be minutes for Hosking normally. In fact, I think, and shout out to the Rugby League guru, I think he mentioned he's heard, and look, you can take this with a grain of salt if you want, but he's heard that Hosking should play around the 60-65 minute mark this week. But the expectation is over the Origin period with Isaiah Yeo, obviously a lock for Origin. And I think Liam Martin's a shoe-in if he's fit, so I think he'll be gone as well. So most likely Hosking will be called upon to play 80 minutes every week. Over that period, I guess the Panthers only cover around 16 in that period, but those scores in round 14 and 17 could also be very handy as well. So to me, it makes sense. I'm not sure saying it's the guru's mail or not. Like, the idea that if Yeo and Martin are out, they're going to want to play Hosking for 65 to 80 minutes. So I think that's kind of how I look at it. I expect him to be a 50-60 score against the Broncos, maybe more if he gets an attacking stat or whatever. And he's not going to leak that much cash, and then he'll probably make it back playing 80 over the Origin period. So to me, I definitely can get around holding him. If you trade him out, it's got to be to someone like a Ryan Madison next week or something like that, where it's a leaked by coverage. He's not playing, you know, Madden's not playing Origin, so he'll be available, that kind of stuff. So I think Hosking will go very well, and it's a trade save for the time being. And then, you know, you either move him on later or, yeah, I guess that's how I'm looking at it. So for me, I've decided I'm going to hold Hosking now, despite initially wanting to flick him myself. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of how I'm approaching that one there. The next thing I wanted to talk about real quick is Joe Ofe-Hangawi, picked up mid-season by the Eels, from the Tigers to the Eels. So obviously a lot of concern, you know, how that impacts the likes of Jermaine Hopgood, Ryan Madison, things like that. So for me, look, if you don't have those guys, I'd be holding off both Hopgood and Maddo anyway. Like, I don't think either of them are going to play Origin, but they might. So I think for me, you know, just wait the one more week and then grab either Maddo or Hopgood afterwards. I'm not sure Joe O is going to really move the needle too much on either of them. I just think, you know, Joe O will take the place of someone like a Makatoa or maybe even a Greg, potentially, even though Greg's been getting better. So, like, I don't think it's going to be, you know, mass minutes for Joe O. Honestly, he hasn't really been playing that well this year. He was a lot better last year, but I wonder if he's, you know, got that bag. And now he's kind of taken the foot off the accelerator a little bit. But who knows, new club, maybe Brad Arthur can work his magic. So, yeah, look, I wouldn't overreact. And the reasons for me not grabbing a Maddo or a Hopgood would be more around Origin rather than Joe signing. maybe it caps their minutes and Joe plays, you know, 35, 50, 40 minutes off the bench or something like that. 50 seems high. I just can't see those minutes available for him, given I would always play Paulo, Campbell-Gillard, Matto and Hopgood more minutes than a Joe O. So I guess that's how I'd see it. Look, this ended up going longer than I expected anyway, but hopefully I went into plenty of detail about those players and, you know, you guys can understand where I'm seeing it. You know, I'm not saying I'm going to be right, but I feel like at least I've laid it out clearly on how I've, you know, analysed those situations, and you guys can make your own assumptions from there. For me, though, like, I definitely think Billy Smith's coming into my team, and right now I've got Harrison Edwards as well. I'm low on trades, but I can see both these guys paying off with the cash and also buy coverage, so it's worth the trades. I'm getting to a point where I'm pretty happy with my 17 most weeks. I am missing some key players, but it's, you know, I've missed the boat. I think, you know, Dave Fifita's one guy I'm glaringly missing from my team. It cost me last week, but I've shown you can survive. You know, I haven't had him since round five. So from round five till now, despite that, I managed to climb from, you know, the 23K to, you know, the top 1-2K. So, you know, you don't have to have all these guys, even though Fifita's been absolutely slaying it. And he's just too much now to trade in while he's going to, you know, go off to Origin most likely. If he somehow doesn't get picked for Origin, you bet 100% he's coming straight into my team in round 14. But yeah, outside of that, I think I'd probably survive not having Fifita over the Origin period, because his minutes might be down, his output might be down, assuming he's playing Origin for Queensland in between there. So that's kind of how I'm seeing it. At this stage, I'm going to have 13 for round 13, and most of it being solid quality guys. I guess like my 12th and 13th guys might be someone like Josh Schuster and Jared Croker, and maybe if like Brandon Williami shows up randomly, he might come into my team too. But yeah, those are the kinds of guys I've got. The other guys are pretty decent, like, you know, Toru Harris, Joey Tapps, you know, probably Robson or whoever I decide to get at hooker. Hopgood, assuming he is there. And, you know, Dillbags, Cody Walker, AJ, Lumulu, yeah, Garrick, obviously. So hopefully, you know, those guys will be sufficient to, you know, at least hold my rank steady, if not potentially push me up, fingers crossed. But anyway, good luck to everyone. Hopefully we'll be back next week with a better sounding voice, but hopefully go the mighty Broncos tonight.